Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We also bring on a variety of guests to talk about those topics. Again, healthcare, community, business, and life. I think today we're going to check all those boxes. Some healthcare, definitely community, okay. Business side, and life, because I love your advice. I'm going to say this is the most difficult name to pronounce in the history of the show, at least reading it.
Reading it, yes.
I think it rhymes with elite, because I would put you as elite. Is that fair?
Okay.
No?
I'll take it. Sure.
Hilit Maydar Alfi.
There you go. Bingo.
I had to ask her like five times. Everyone calls you Hillet.
You know how LinkedIn has that little button that you can hear the pronunciation?
No. Somebody told me that.
They used to have it. I don't know if they have it anymore, but...
I did not know that.
That was one of the first things I did.
She is the co-founder and CEO of a company called Spatially Health. We're going to talk a ton about it. I want to read a couple taglines from their website. A cloud-based decision-guiding platform that operationalizes SDOH to promote health equity. Other tagline, a health equity marketplace for SDOH interventions and solutions.
That's a lot.
I know, it's a lot of
words. I have to work on that. Yeah.
That's okay, but I think diving in and understanding what SDOH is.
Yes.
What is SDOH?
It stands for Social Determinants of Health.
Trey, what does SDOH stand for?
Social Determinants of Health.
Social Determinants of Health. That's a mouthful. SDOH, so we're going to use that acronym a few times. Mm-hmm. And then also ACO stands for?
Accountability.
I don't remember. We just told it.
Oh, my gosh. I'm an idiot.
You were close to it.
I love these guys. We're talking healthcare here. What does it stand for?
Place.
Oh, gosh.
Accountable.
Yeah.
Care.
Care.
Care, that was the word.
Organization.
Organization.
Right, so again, I love healthcare conversations. Hopefully they learn some stuff along the way. But
yes.
So Spatially Health, it was founded in...
2019.
And you're based in...
Miami.
Currently working in how many states?
We're all over.
Like all almost states. All 50 states.
Yeah,
from
no problem.
Coast to coast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where do you want to start? You want to start serious or not serious?
No, not serious.
Not serious. Okay. Miami, South Florida.
Yes.
I grew up down there.
You did? I didn't.
You grew up in Philly?
Yeah, in and out of Philadelphia. Moved around a lot.
Around.
We moved down to Miami in that first wave in like 2010. So
a while ago.
We are the original trendsetters.
Original trendsetters. What's more healthy, Miami or Philly?
Miami.
Healthier?
Buddy.
Yeah.
What has more crime, Philly or Miami?
Both?
Equal?
Probably.
Equal tie?
Yeah.
Who has better weather?
I'd say Miami. We kind of slug through the summer to enjoy the winter.
Yeah, so. Summer's brutal. Do you bounce around? So again, just give us a background here. I love this. A PhD from University of Pennsylvania in city and regional planning.
Yes.
Which cracks me up. And then you're doing in SDOH and working with ACOs is pretty cool, I think. I'm kind of a nerd. These guys are like, what is this guy talking about? Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. Like how, come on here. Let's talk about city planning, architecture. I heard this story.
Okay. So somehow was born in Philadelphia, raised in Philadelphia, stayed in Philadelphia until, you know, we started moving around. So did my undergraduate, my background's actually in design. So I'm a trained architect, worked in the field for several years and then went to grad school and got a PhD in city and regional planning. And the commonality between the two was that, you know, the built environment influences your behavior and your decision-making. In architecture, you kind of design around it, right? You build spaces, you define spaces, you build buildings to kind of, you know, guide people through different places and get, you know, what they need to get done. For me, a house, a building is like a machine, right? There's systems in there. You need to, there's a goal, there's a purpose for it. So that was my approach in design. The same kind of goes for cities, but it's just a much bigger field, right? So we have systems in cities. Often enough, they're called infrastructure. What typically gets defined as infrastructure is roads and railroads and utilities. But if we kind of look beyond that, there's a lot of infrastructure that defines our day-to-day life. Basically, everything that you do when you walk out the door to your house every morning. So you have schools, you have libraries, you have parks, you have shopping centers, you have places of work, you have places of worship, you have today places where you exercise. And all those become systems. And it became obvious that, you know, places have certain systems, you know, a certain level of systems. So my focus in grad school was developing evaluation systems for quality of life, meaning providing models and ways for municipalities to evaluate what areas are low in quality of life, and in their toolbox and in the infrastructure that they have, what can they better provide those communities to increase the quality of life?
Large cities, small cities, like what cities
were
you?
Any size. Any size that, you know.
Before the SDOH world, like what cities were you working with?
That was theoretical, right?
Okay.
That was the systems that were designed and the modeling that I started off with. He's looking at me like,
"What?
This is healthcare, yeah."
That separated like a good city or a good quality of life versus a not good quality of life.
So you kind of have different theories around that, right? You have cities that are considered like the old European city. You know how you love Europe? Like you go to Europe and it's just like every city is like so quaint, and because there's a town square and, you know, your food is relatively fresh. It comes from a local farm and people go to the local store, the small store, to buy, you know, two tomatoes and, you know, go to the next door and you buy a few eggs and that's it. And you basically do it on a regular basis. So that gives you a sense of community. You're like, you know these people. The bigger the city gets, the less, you know, that relationship exists, but it still exists in different ways. So cities that were laid out, like older cities like New York, you have a bunch of squares. You kind of have different areas that centralize and focus people. That gives you identity almost, right? That's how you have all these different enclaves in Manhattan or in New York.
I almost just sang the Alicia Keys song New York, but I'm a terrible singer, so I'm going to go ahead and not do that.
I will not sing. There's no way I'm singing.
What about Miami?
Miami's interesting. It's different. Miami has a bit of a Manhattan effect in the sense that you have the ocean on one side, right? And you have the Everglades on the other. So your real estate is limited, right? So it's
can't
not like...
West. Yeah.
No. And that's what's driving a lot of the real estate, because you have limited, and it's also driving everything vertical.
So just, again, you live in Miami. How often are you in Jacksonville, Northeast Florida? That's where we met. Health Chiefs, I like to give shout-outs to people. That's the first time we met.
Yes, love Health
Nicole
Chiefs.
Nicole Bradbury.
My goddess, yes.
Yep. That's your goddess?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh,
oh, I love that.
Then.
Yes.
I've been trying to get her on, too.
We pray to the goddess Nicole, yes.
Oh, I love that. She's good people. She's good people. Hey, even give that clip, we'll send it to her. Northeast Florida, like, what do you think? Our city's just so large. Here's how I look at it. We have the beaches, then you have this other pocket, then you have downtown, then you have the town center. Like, what are your
thoughts? I love Jax. I the first time I went to Jacksonville, I came home, told my husband, you know how I get a 10-year itch every 10 years? I need to move somewhere else. I've never lived in the same house for more than 5 years.
Well, you're welcome here.
Thank you. And came back like, this is awesome. First of all, it's huge, right? It's like, I think, the biggest city in the country.
Geographically. Minus one in Alaska, but nobody counts that.
But to me, it seems like it was built for a huge population. So I think there's a huge potential for Jacksonville to grow significantly.
What attracts you so much about Jacksonville, just on a personal level?
I love places that have opportunity, kind of smell it. So
love it.
It's
I smell
so,
opportunity. There's it's huge close. Opportunity here.
Here in 5 years.
Look, there's a lot, right? It's growing. I think healthcare, I don't want to judge the healthcare system here in Jacksonville because there's some great stuff, but we could do some things to improve, like any city.
That's everywhere.
I've got a random question. Who has better grocery stores, Florida or Pennsylvania?
Ooh, they probably get
that's tough because we got the Amish.
It's not. Publix.
We have the Amish. Well, okay.
The corn up there is unmatched.
So, shout out to Publix. Yes, absolutely. Popcorn chicken is like our sin, but yes, it's the best thing ever. But Pennsylvania has the Amish, so you can't get better chicken.
Yeah.
You're eating that chicken probably down here through Publix, so I hit both of them.
Oh, man, we are. I love Publix. Okay, so co-founded the company. What's your co-founder's name?
Adi?
Adi Segal. Shout out to Adi. We love Adis.
We love Adi.
We love shouting out to people.
We pray to the goddess Adi, yes.
How many goddesses do you pray to?
As long as a female, we pray to them. That's good.
I love it. That's incredible. So how did you two know each other? Where did this idea come from?
Really going back. So Adi I know because she is a childhood friend of one of my favorite cousins. So kind of know
about
Adi.
Yeah.
Yes. And Adi's like a brilliant data technologist. She's just a really, really, really smart girl. Really, really smart. Not much patience, which is good. Gets to the bottom of things really fast, which keeps us on the straight and narrow. So about 2018, 2019, I was coming out of grad school. I was working with the different models that I was developing using location intelligence and spatial analytics. That's all based on geographic information systems, which is kind of like a CAD for topography. You basically build topographic models. It's really unique because...
What does topography mean, Justin? He's checked out. Topography.
Like isn't that when you... Like typography, like letters and...
Oh my God.
Not typography, topography.
He was over there staring at his phone. But again, like we never know who's listening, who's not.
Back in the day when you had to open a map and actually read a map and see where are the hills and where are the valleys.
Done that before.
Yeah. And either scouts or...
You mean Google
who knows
maps,
when
right?
by now?
No,
yeah.
This is so you're finishing your PhD and you again the spatial analytics is something mm-hmm. I think you might want to dive into and topography. Am I saying that right? By the way,
yes,
that's
topography,
relevant.
Yes.
So you studied that and then the two of you met one day for coffee and started writing stuff on a napkin.
So was working with the models, right? Worked with small medium businesses, worked with real estate companies, worked with marketing, but it was just like not a passion. It was like. Felt like you're cutting butter with a steak knife. This was a big, powerful tool, big, model that we built. And they didn't need all that, power. It was just overkill. Then started talking to some physician friends of mine and, we're talking about what we're doing. And they started telling me about, this idea of social determinants of health where, providers actually want to know a little bit more about their patients, not just the disease state. And we got to talking like, that's basically what quality of life is, just with a different title, with a different language. And lo and behold, SDOH really is not something that recently came about. It's been around for a while. At least the idea of it, the knowledge that our health outcomes are, the statistic is what, like 80% of our health outcomes are determined by the factors other than medical care. That's astounding, 80%.
Go ahead, Trey.
So basically just your environment can totally determine the outcome.
SDOH, social determinants of health, like try to say that five times fast. It is impossible. It's been around.
Try to write that when you have 150 character limit. And social determinants of health takes up
paperwork or forms, you have to fill it out. That's definitely going to be one of the healthy or not healthy questions.
Although in school, you have a 250 word essay. I'd be writing that four or five times.
Or if they counted letters, yes. You use that to spell it out.
That's good.
So again, it's existed. It's been, I would say, semi-relevant. I think COVID kind of put a flashlight on that and said, whoa, this is relevant.
It blew it out of the water.
Like, hold on a second. There are all these things that are relevant to healthcare. Go ahead, Trey.
Oh, no. It's just so funny you said COVID, but you started your business before COVID, correct?
Yes.
So you were like, you didn't see it coming, and then all of a sudden you were positioned to be like ready to roll, correct?
It was wild during COVID because we thought, oh, my God, the gods have shined on us. Here it is. Here it comes. And everybody's like, well, what am I supposed to do with this? Like with SDOH, with social determinants. Yes. Physicians, doctors, they want their patients to be healthier, but it's a lot more complicated than that. It's not easy.
Okay, so SDOH, I want to get to a point where I stop having to say social determinants of health. That's a very popular term, SDOH.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, their website. They said five domains are the big ones. Somehow I have six. Economic stability,
mm-hmm.
education access and quality, healthcare access and quality, housing, that's what it is. I didn't delete that. Neighborhood and built environment and social and community context.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are so relevant to healthcare. Can you dive into that? Like, which one do you think, are there one or two that are more important than the others?
It's not which one is more important. It's how do you provide for those? And you're going to have different methods and different strategies for providing those. Some of those are long, long cycles. Some of them are easier to attain. And you kind of have to be able to separate them and say, okay, if we want to get results quicker, what are we going to focus on? That doesn't mean you let the others go. But these are deep social societal problems. This is not something that should be looked at only from a healthcare perspective. These are deep, deep problems.
What do you think the biggest one to tackle is? Maybe there's not one. I'm just curious. Like, I look at all these, and it's tough. I think neighborhood and built environment is huge, right?
Well, that's what speaks to me.
Neighborhood and built environment?
Yeah, that's what...
city planner.
That's what you can probably... You have the great... I would not say the greatest, but the greater impact sooner because you can see what you have, you can see what's missing, and then you can fill it in with different... services with different ways. So
go ahead, Justin.
From those five or six that you said, Jacksonville as a city specifically, which one do you think is the biggest challenge here?
I wouldn't know what to answer.
Or are we positioned? I don't know. When you were listing all those off, I was like, man, I feel like Jacksonville's well positioned on all of those.
Let me tell you, like personally, this is strictly an opinion, right? Maybe delete this out as I scratch my eye.
Please put this on the video.
No edits. Hashtag no
edits.
Is that
pink eye?
Got him.
Maybe. I got young kids. I think education access and quality. This is my, right? So our education system in Jacksonville right now is teetering. The public health school system in Jacksonville, I love you guys, but it's a disaster. There are charter schools exploding, which are doing well. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see what's happening with the education system here in Northeast Florida.
So if I had to take off my healthcare hat
yeah.
and give you one silver bullet, I would put everything into education, starting with early childhood education. 3 months, 6 months, like below the age of one. Early childhood education all the way through high school.
And
that's where I would put everything in. But
can education almost be one of the easier ones to tackle because so many people could actually homeschool? And I know that scares people away, but that could be almost a guarantee way to increase those numbers on education.
There's probably lots of ways of doing it, but you're looking at a 20-30 year timeline.
Yeah, it takes a long
time. Fair enough.
That doesn't mean don't do it. If we could do it right now. You're going to see the results in 20, 30 years.
This is actually great because I want to go a little bit personal here for a second, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Like, what drew me to you, we met at this Health Chiefs event. One is she made me laugh. Like, if you make me laugh, we're immediately friends.
That was the beer.
It was the whiskey. No, okay. But I would say you're a good mom. I don't know you that well, but you seem to be very very close with your children, right? You have a son and two daughters.
Three daughters.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. You have four.
Wow.
Yeah. We're just talking about, should we have a fourth or not? Not together, but.
modern science.
Education, like in your households, I have to read this because I don't know where you wrote it. Whatever adventures life will bring your way, always remember, be kind, be smart, don't be on the news, and don't forget to call your mother.
That's like the best advice I've ever heard in my life. Those are the rules. That's it.
So in your household, like how important was education and learning? I mean,
every kid can learn, right? That's, every child has the ability to learn. Not every kid is the same. We have, and hopefully she doesn't hate me for this, but our youngest is dyslexic. When we realized that she's dyslexic, it was a non-issue because she got the help that she needed. And all of a sudden she realized, Mom, this is my superpower. I'm like, yes, it is. Mm. It is 100% your superpower. But the point is that every kid learns differently. Like some kids learn a little bit more like equally to each other. But so I think differentiated learning needs to be adopted everywhere. People need to understand that not everybody can sit for 4 hours at a desk and read and do, the same drills or the same exercises. Some people are more experiential learners. But when we had our kids, we were actually living in Princeton, New Jersey. And when our son was like 18 months or something, I'm like, I can't have you in the house anymore. I need you. Let's find somewhere where I can, shove
you off
for a few hours a day.
Get a break.
pretty much. And they had a Princeton Montessori school, which is like the mecca of Montessori teaching. They actually brought teachers from all over the world to learn how to be a Montessori teacher. And if you know anything about Montessori, everybody thinks, or today, they think, oh, it's so bougie, right? Because,
good word, by the way. That's a great word.
Because tuition is, so expensive for Montessori schools. But the reality is that Maria Montessori developed the method for poor villages, right? Where you can actually teach a child with, mud and sticks. And you know, I consider myself a Montessori parent because they taught us as parents, how do you deal with tantrums? How do you deal with a kid that, you know, doesn't want to get dressed in the morning? How do you deal with a kid that's never on time? I've gone through all of those with my kids. I can tell you what works and what doesn't
work. Okay, let's say, how do you deal with a kid? We got young dads here.
But my kids are already old enough, so you cannot call Child Protective Services on me.
I love it.
Oh. But my favorite was our oldest, our son, was, you know, Mr. Last Minute. So he was always late. Like, come on, get in the car. We're going to be late. We're going to be late. So I told him, if you're going to be late, I am leaving without you. Like, yeah, right.
You left.
So I left.
That's crazy.
I love it.
And
like,
I
how
see him
old?
At the edge.
Heck yeah.
Oh, he was probably 6 or 7.
Oh, man.
He was at the end of the driveway, threw his backpack on. I'm like, mommy, come back. I went, kept going until I was out of eyesight, went around the block and came back. And it's like, you will never do that again.
I will clap for that.
And he was never late again.
My wife won't love that. I all the time. I'm like, if you're not in the car, I'm leaving you.
He was safe. Listen, he was safe.
Yeah, thank you.
He wasn't being irresponsible.
In your driveway of your house.
What's better, you know, teaching him that lesson that, yeah, I will leave without you, or you know, I'm going to be angry with you, I'm going to yell at you, I'm going to berate you. So that's a lot of the skills that we were taught, you know, in Montessori.
I'm going to reel it in for 1 second and then go back to
some fun.
Did we
go off track?
No, wait, that's what we do here. I told you. But then the second half, we'll really dive into spatially what you're doing. We got a couple minutes left. We'll talk about ACOs again, SDOH a bunch, mm-hmm. but then I really want to dive into what you're doing, the statistics you have, like who a good client or customer is. Did you drive through the rain to come here?
No, but I've driven through a hurricane.
For what?
I had a meeting here and I had to drive back and the hurricane, I forget which one, I don't remember the names. One of the hurricanes was coming through. We didn't know where it was going to land. I remember driving, looking at the bands of rain, saying, okay, if I time it this way, I'm going to get... So I literally drove in between the bands.
That's how you know she's been in Florida long enough, right? Because some people are like, panic. So my wife still panics when she sees hurricane. I'm like, we might not even get rained
on. Oh, we still call the locals, like, are we going or not going? It's like, you can stay. It's not going to
hold it out. Okay. Hold it out.
Yeah.
So I asked you on the prep call, what do you do for fun? Do you remember your answer?
I don't do fun.
I don't have fun. That was her answer. I was like, oh my God.
What about fantasy football?
Well, it's not my fun. I just have to listen to how much my son lost on it.
I love that you're listening to your son and talking to it. But you know, you mentioned yoga, reading. You have a big household, so household stuff?
Yeah, most of the kids are out of the house. But yeah, we have a big household, big family.
When do you downsize?
We kind of started to a while ago.
Yeah.
So we moved from a big house to like a condo unit.
Oh, so you started the process.
We're not going back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Too much work.
We have so much stuff. Any advice on how to just get rid of stuff for kids?
You think now you have a lot of stuff? You're in the digital age. Do you know what it was like before the digital age when you had all the toys and all the books? That's something I don't know if kids still look at is books.
We're huge books in our house.
Where do you buy them now, though? There's no more Barnes & Noble.
Go to the library.
There's a couple used bookstores here locally, too, that are great. You can go buy kids' used books and adult used books. That's one thing in our house. Before you can even touch any digital device, like you will play outside or read. How much time we got left? 1 minute. Any shout outs before I wrap us up? Commercial break?
Oh, you caught me off guard on that one.
Yeah, you can think about it. That's all right. We'll end a little early on this one.
I will give a big shout out to Jacksonville. I think you guys are awesome.
Yes, yeah. But you have to say Duval. You know how to say Duval the right way?
Duval.
You gotta say Duval. Can you do that or no?
That sounds a little fanatic. Duval.
Yeah, we got it.
People here are really nice.
Got it.
Really, really nice.
Oh my goodness, I told you the time would fly. That's my least favorite part is when we run out of time. First half, though. We got one more half.
Okay.
Elite Halit. Can I start calling you that?
Halit, yeah.
Elite Halit.
I'm going to get an ego. You don't do that.
I like that. Maydar Alfie. I had to write, like I had literally had to spell this phonetically. Co-founder and, oh my gosh, the alarm goes off. That's on me. Co-founder and CEO?
Of Spatially Health.
That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you missed the first half here on the radio, good news is you can catch the full episode on your favorite podcast platform under What the Health Just Happened. Oh my gosh, that first half was all over the place. I enjoyed it. Hopefully you did too. We talked family, we talked life, we talked social determinants of health. I'm going to start calling it soda.
That's our internal...
Soda?
Yeah.
I want to call it stuh.
No, that
but that's just
stupid.
Ridiculous. I know, it sounds ridiculous. some ACO stuff. The second half, we'll really dive into spatially health, what you all are doing, which we touched on the first half. But first, we have to play healthy or not healthy.
Okay.
Are you in? Healthy or not healthy, public subs.
Healthy.
Oh, Healthy or not healthy Philly fans?
Very healthy.
I'm going to disagree on that one.
Healthy or unhealthy tailgating those games in December. That's...
Healthy or not healthy filling out paperwork and forms, and you have to write out the entire term, social determinants of health.
Very unhealthy.
Healthy or not healthy CEUs, continuing education units.
We'll keep it healthy. You got to work through.
She mentioned her husband's in real estate and he has to do like a bunch of hours. You got any healthy or not healthy guys?
Healthy or not healthy driving from Miami to Orlando to Jacksonville back to Miami in one day to do this show.
It's healthy the day that you're driving. It's very unhealthy the following day. It hurts.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
What's the diet like in the drive? Do you eat during the drive?
No.
Oh my God.
Not even
first
Twizzlers,
of all, no. Because, honestly, no. Because when I do these long drives, I have to take my husband's car. Mm. And if I make a mess in there or spill anything, that will be a problem. Is it a nice car?
Sports car?
It's a nice enough car.
Fair enough.
We'll leave it at that.
Healthy or not healthy, eating in the car.
I have no problem with it, but not in his car.
It's never healthy for me. I eat like absolute trash when I'm
But traveling. I'm an almond mom, so you know, if I'm going, I always have like almonds.
Or,
yeah.
I like beef jerky, by the way.
That's cool.
Sorry, I digress here. Okay. Let's go back to the business. You are the co-founder and CEO. Before we dive into what you're doing, what is it like being a founder of a... Are you still a startup? Would you consider yourself in the startup phase?
I think we'll always be in some startup phase. It's just the nature of what we do. There's so much evolution in it. You got to stay hungry. So I think we'll always consider ourselves startup.
Adjust, pivot,
rinse,
constantly.
Repeat. Yes.
How many employees, like how many people work there?
We're, I think, 13 now.
13 right now.
NFTs.
Are they all in the state of Florida, spread throughout the U.S.?
We are spread out throughout many time zones.
Technology backgrounds, healthcare backgrounds, like what's the workforce look like?
So actually nobody comes, well, a couple do come from a healthcare background, but not like the medical side of healthcare. Mostly data engineers, spatial data scientists, like heavy duty stuff.
So not any of us, by the way. I was just gonna say, are you hiring? Do you need some people to, you don't need us.
Hopefully one day, yeah.
For an average listener, like what does the business do, right? What do you, how are you helping patients? Obviously, I think ACOs, like how many different sectors are you helping? I got a printout right here for an answer for this.
Right. So would it make sense to kind of go back and even talk about what we're doing?
Yes.
Like, so yeah, back to social determinants of health. So coming out of COVID, everybody's kind of like, What the hell just happened?
Yeah, good one.
I think it probably didn't shock everybody, you know, but the how bad it was, I think, really took everybody by surprise. Like how bad off some of, you know, certain populations fared really poorly, and you know, we basically know the reasons why. So. Coming out of COVID, CMS, in its brilliance, and I give them credit, decided to promote and drive this concept of health equity, meaning, you know, people that don't have the opportunity to be at that level of health or their ideal level of health or, yeah, their best health, you know, they're going to need certain help to get there. If you take a step back, it makes sense. We kind of have a shared interest in that because the healthier we are, the less it's going to cost to take care of us. And medicine today is going to get more and more expensive as, you know, procedures get more precise and more expensive and pharmaceuticals get more abundant and expensive. So we want to try to stay as healthy as possible. So the problem is you have this great idea, right? You have some pillars that are significant, you know, in terms of deep social issues. How do you start bringing that into healthcare so that, you know, wherever there's the opportunity for a provider, for a physician who, you know, sees a patient sometimes more often than, you know, other professions, how can that influence, you know, the health of the patient? What can organizations do to improve people's health? So there's another issue that's happening in healthcare, which is, I think, really interesting, is this whole concept of value-based care, which, you know, not coming from healthcare was a real draw in the sense that if we need to improve healthcare and get from a fee-for-service concept, like how do you how do you basically gate healthcare in a way that's not gating it? It's through this concept of value-based care, where you're actually getting paid for value and not for volume.
I'm going to pause there real quick because it helps to just, I don't know who's listening. We never know.
I don't know either. And hopefully I don't get any angry emails or texts or LinkedIn messages.
If they do, they'll come to me and I'll take care of that. Think about it. American healthcare fee for service, right? You go in, you get your belly button looked at, check a box. You got to pay for that. You get an EKG put on your chest, check the box, go for it. Value-based care is trying to drive value-based care, right? So it incentivizes good care in order to, I would say, save money long-term.
Yeah, to improve the health outcome so you don't have to spend as much money. Yeah.
So, sorry, now pick back up. I just like to really bring it down because sometimes listeners are like, thank you for trying to briefly explain
that. That's what I'm saying.
Care.
We're going to be hiring soon because I think you need folks like you to help translate the disasters in my head. So why does the government care? Because the government's the largest payer, right? And they pay for Medicare and Medicaid. And Medicare patients, they tend to be older. They tend to need services and they tend to, have other requirements to help them stay healthy. So I forget what I was going. This happens to me.
That's all right. Somebody's phone just rang. We almost made him answer it. I'm kidding. So CMS, Medicaid patients, the government is the biggest payer. Yeah. Why is value-based care so important to Medicare and Medicaid?
Because Medicare is kind of governed in two ways. You have Medicare Advantage, which has its own processes and models and ways of doing things, which, has proved its success, some less, some more, but is basically here to stay. But then you have the other half, which is largely fee-for-service, and that needs to be kind of reined in. So how do you do it without, negatively impacting people's health? You want people to get the services that they need. You don't want any healthcare, withheld from them, but you also want to reward the physicians, the providers, for quality. So, and for value.
Readmissions, is that a big factor?
It's one of the measures. Absolutely, because that's a measure of, something wrong happened, something bad happened. Like, why are they getting readmitted?
And it costs more money, correct, every time they're getting readmitted?
Well, significantly, if you're readmitted, too fast, again,
within
that's a
30
whole different
days.
Conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have all sorts of,
you're getting
tons of rules.
So again, you mentioned something, too. I pulled this from the website. The stakeholders, accountable care organizations, providers, care managers, and patients.
Right.
Those are four big stakeholders.
Yes. So going up to value-based care, that's a great concept. How are you going to implement that in day-to-day? And that's where accountable care organizations come in. That's like a vehicle that value-based care, one of the vehicles that value-based care gets implemented. And it's really, if you kind of think about it, it's probably not the best way to say it, but it's real. It's the CMS's way of experimenting with different models to see what works. And it's actually pretty brilliant, right? Especially coming from technology, we're iterating all the time. We're testing. If it doesn't work, move on, check something else. Comes in design too. Rule number one in design, do not fall in love with your work. And
if you think about it that way,
don't get stuck on something, stress test it. See what, where does it break? Where can it be improved? So for CMS to try to move so many patients into value-based care, they need a lot of different models to kind of see, what works. Not the same model is going to work for every single provider, not the same model is going to work with every geography and, the different dynamics that are happening. So accountable care organizations are really the vehicle, and CMS is driving this concept of health equity. Now, how do they do it? They came up with, there's a history to it, but I'll just kind of fast forward. There is a relatively new model called REACH-ACO, which, don't ask me what it's like, I forget what it stands for because we just call it REACH-ACO. And one of the drivers of REACH is writing out a health equity plan, meaning, okay, ACO organization, you have 20, 30, 40, 50, 100,000 patients on your panel. And I'm really paraphrasing here. tell us, CMS doesn't talk like this. Tell us, with your patient population, what are the gaps from an SDOH perspective? What are the patient's needs? And how are you going to help them?
So CMS, I know you're paraphrasing. I'm going to try to paraphrase even more. CMS, you know what CMS is?
No.
Okay, that's fine. I love it. Do you know what CMS is?
No.
The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Yes.
Okay. Which creates a lot of rules and regulations. So they're creating these we'll almost call them policies and procedures for ACOs to follow these in order to...
They're payment models.
There we go.
That's what they are. They're payment models, but that have a lot of, you know, metrics that have to do with quality and, you know, how do you... You kind of get, call them like bonus points, but I just don't want to get too much in the weeds, not to get, you know, bore too many people. But you kind of get, you get bonus points for treating patients that have high needs. Not medical needs, but high social needs. And you want to know who they are because that's really one of the reasons why REACH was developed, was to be able to go after more vulnerable populations and so be able to treat them.
Spatially is helping provide that data to ACOs or value-based care organizations?
Well, ACOs are a form of value-based care organization.
Okay.
So ACOs are our target model. There's a couple of them. REACH is one of them. MSSP is another. There's only about 550 or 600 of those, you know, in the entire country. I don't know by now how many there are because there's a couple of new ones and some left the programs. So call it about, you know, 500-600 of these. Wormhole. I don't remember what was going with this.
I like you more and more.
This is what COVID did to me. I don't know if you have any long COVID, but for me, it is memory.
Memory?
Yeah. And sense of smell.
We can rewind and edit over, but I think like just keeping this in here is hysterical.
You know your audience better than I do.
It's tough. The main point is like what you're working on and doing is very complicated. It is not easy. Everything in healthcare is incredibly complicated.
But I remembered where I was going.
That's here. You're welcome.
So rewind, remember when, you know, their statistic is that 80% of your health outcomes are determined by non-medical factors. Organizations, physicians, they know how to risk stratify their patients from a medical perspective. They know the chronic conditions. They know, you know, what the medical needs are. But what about all the rest? What about the social risks?
How
do they have any insights on what those social risks are? How do you find out what they are? How do you start bringing it into your workflows? How do you prioritize? Because you cannot treat all of your patients, definitely not at once, and definitely not with the same services. Because healthcare is a bit of a hammer and nail situation where if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if they have a good transportation service, they're going to figure out how to help their patients with transportation services. But SDOH is dynamic, it's complex, and there's lots of other services that could benefit patients in different ways to improve engagement, which is probably one of the biggest priorities that doctors have.
When you say engagement, you mean the patient and their families engaging in seeking care?
Yeah,
or engaging in seeking, you know, filling their prescription medications? What do you mean?
Everything, like engaging with your health, like being curious. What's going on with me? What do I need, you know? What do I need help with? Why am I taking medication? Why do I need a certain treatment? How can I help myself, you know, get better if it's possible? So, and then obviously, you know, the whole, the support system around. So physicians want engagement. They also want trust. Today, you know, healthcare is the dirty little non-secret. Is that it's a business.
Yeah, yeah.
And physicians have less than 9 minutes with a patient. They barely get through the medical stuff. They're not going to be able to get through, you know, any social care needs. So CMS has kind of put in different mechanisms to try to collect that data. From what we see, it's still really early on. There's a lot of room for improvement. We're happy about that because that's what we bring to the table. So unlike, you know, our approach to SDOH is probably different than what the market is used to because of our background and because what we're able to do, you know, leveraging location intelligence, spatial analytics. We actually get to the heart of healthcare, which is granular. I mean, hyperlocal. So healthcare is hyperlocal. Healthcare is a local story. Location data is healthcare data. Yes. Right. So, you know, when we first started in healthcare, we started talking to, you know, some people in the industry. It's like, oh, yeah, we already do it. We already collect zip codes. I'm like, zip codes? Okay. From what I know, zip codes is good for Santa Claus, you know, to deliver packages through USPS. But if anybody knows a zip code, you can have huge ranges in services, in quality of life, in access to care, in conditions, you know, from one side to another. So all you're doing is kind of muddling it up, yeah, into some kind of like a bulky
average.
That's
a bougie word.
Is it?
I'm not kidding. You said bougie earlier, so I just had to throw that out there.
That's kind of a drunk bougie word, yeah. Maybe. I'm not sure what that word was. So what we do in a very giant nutshell is we identify the health barriers for every single patient on the patient panel. Unlike, you know, what the industry is probably familiar with is a concept of population health, which is also really important. And it, you know, it definitely helps with understanding diseases and, you know, what's your population dealing from a medical perspective. So, and they basically look at, you know, 30,000 feet and try to understand what's happening at the individual level. Our capability is kind of inverse that. And we model around the individual and then we're able to scale it up to any cohort. So we can look at particular chronic conditions. We can look at particular services. We can look at a population of patients of a particular provider. So there's a lot of different ways of stratifying it and being able to build a strategy. Going back to the health equity plan, how am I going to take care of 50, 60,000 patients? Who am I going to prioritize? So we identify the health barriers for every individual patient. We then identify what's the right intervention type, meaning we're making that toolbox a lot bigger, giving a lot more tools to that toolbox. And then we also match it to the right service. So where did I lose you?
I was going to ask a question.
Deep breaths.
No. I have a thought and a question, because you said something specifically about physicians, like what's in it for me? Right. So you, let's say it's an ACO group that has a 60,000 patient population, mm-hmm. or client population. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you answer that when they say, because like you said, it is a business. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is a business. Mm-hmm. How do you answer that when physicians say, what's in it for me?
So first of all, if you do it the right way, basically our approach, there's additional revenue that can be gained. Through, for example, annual wellness visits. A lot of ACOs get to maybe 50% of their patient population comes in for annual wellness visits. This is probably more on MSSPs and less on the REACHs.
Many acronyms, MSSPs and REACHs.
Yeah, Medical Shared Savings Plan Program, something like that.
Good guess.
Sorry, I forgot that.
That's good. No, you knew more than I did.
Look at me.
Sure.
5 years ago, I'm like, what are you talking about? The first thing I did when we started working in healthcare is bought a dictionary.
A medical dictionary?
No, like an acronym dictionary.
An acronym dictionary.
Didn't help me.
I have one. I'm going to bring it next time. I have an acronyms in healthcare that's as big as any dictionary.
It didn't help me.
Okay.
It just had more questions. I think I locked myself in the room for like eight months.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Okay, so physicians, what's in it for them? They're incentivized, better care for their patients, of course, but the monetary
physicians
side
Physicians want to do right, yes. Physicians want to do right by their patients, right? They only want to, that's what they're there for. But there's a lot of barriers that is actually impacting getting that medical care. If a patient cannot come for an appointment, guess what? They're not going to get medical care. If your patient is a fall risk and, you know, they are recently diagnosed, let's say with dementia, and they are a fall risk, if that patient falls and goes to the emergency room, that's going to cost you a lot.
Ding.
And remember, we're talking about value-based care, meaning a lot of these organizations, and I'm saying a lot and not being more specific because I don't want to aggravate anybody.
Do it. Not yet.
They take risk on their populations. So, you know, if you do good by Mrs. Smith, you get rewarded. Value, right? You get paid for value. If you don't do good, you're basically on the hook for that cost. But nobody wants the doctors to go bankrupt or have any other, you know, financial issues. But those are basically like the guardrails. Let's just call them. That's how we're trying to keep, you know, things in check and in line. And it's still early. So there's a lot of things that we don't know how patients are going to, respond to a lot of these services or what's the long-term effect of these services. And that's a lot of the debates that are happening. So
How long do you think it takes? When can you show like this is working? Is this a 1 year thing, a 5 year thing, a 30 year thing?
Well, REACH is on the clock for 5 years, so it's got to start showing, and it's showing some progress. But I think it took a little bit for these organizations to get their sea legs on to really understand like how to operate in this. And each one is finding their own strengths in order to kind of figure out how to do this. I think, or what we're seeing now is, now this the real concept of what we're here for is to drive health equity is starting to become real, and there's less hesitation. There's more curiosity of like, okay, how can we really do this in a right way that's efficient, that is helping our bottom line, but most importantly, helping our patients.
Helping the patients. That's the one thing for me. I constantly, oh my gosh, because we're all in business. I say it all the time. Money matters. Like, my kids are in school. Hopefully my daughter gets married one day and I can pay for her wedding, right? You got to get cars, all that stuff.
Well, I tell my kids to elope. Like, I'm all in for eloping. Like, just have a nice dinner. And
my parents would probably say the same thing. This is a weird question. You don't have to answer this. Like, so how is your organization compensated? Are you paid by ACO companies? Are you setting up direct contracts? And then I have a, kind of a second part question to that.
So we work in a way that is a win-win-win for everybody. And that's, it took us a while to figure this out. So for our ACOs, we basically charge a flat SaaS fee.
Software as a service.
Another acronym.
I know, I'm like, we'll make sure.
Oh man, I became that person.
One? SaaS.
I became that person.
So you're charging a monthly SaaS fee.
It's a month, but you know, bring on as many people as you want. The more people are on a platform, the better, you know, the platform is, the stronger the platform is. And we work with our channel partners to provide the right services to the patients. So we welcome ACOs, big and small. The smaller ones are actually really interesting because there's a lot to work with. They're really exciting.
Yeah.
The bigger ones have other challenges, but there's a lot of good work. They want to do good. So it's a really exciting time.
I think about this all the time too. Sometimes physicians get a bad rap because they only have 9 minutes with the patient, but it's not because of their choice, right? Direct primary care is a whole other conversation. Okay, second part. So like, let's use Reach for an example. They're on a 5-year clock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why there's not much innovation in healthcare, is because like, you're on the clock. If you don't make this work in 5 years or less, like, you got to shut the doors down.
Well, to drive innovation in healthcare, you kind of need to follow the money. You need to figure out what's in it for me. Why should I be doing this? So CMS probably still has a lot of work to do on incentivizing physicians taking risk on social care for their patients. That's still a lot of work that needs to happen. We hear it all the time from physicians. Like, what else do you want from me? I mean, we had a physician saying, what the exclamation am I supposed to be, a housing expert? I'm like, well, no, but there's a time and place to take care of that for your patient. But there are other things that you definitely want to help your patient with, like in-home modifications for, you know, patients that have recently been diagnosed with dementia and are at a fall risk.
I knew this
would
happen.
That was one thing. Sorry.
Oh, what's
that
the
was
other?
One thing. The other is need investment money. And what's happening in the, you know, environment this past year is hurting innovation in healthcare.
That's like a great transition to the second episode we do, by the way, because I told you this time.
Am I invited to that?
We should come to her.
I said we're going to South Florida. I have two people lined up. I just got to pick a date. Will you come back? I celebrate. Yes. Like, would you do this again?
Sure.
And now we knocked off the rust. Now you understand the show, and then we could just dive in, hit the other stuff. We're almost out of time, though.
I'll wear an Eagles jersey next time. So.
Oh, man.
We'll wear
Jags stuff.
Yeah, let's go.
Dolphins play Jags tomorrow, because this show airs on Saturday. Wink, wink. Hey, by the way, seriously, thank you for coming. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself. That's a lot.
Very much.
There's so much to unpack. I think we barely scratched the surface. I wish you the best. Like, how can we help? Who can we introduce you to? Talk about it more. How relevant social determinants of health are. Soda. I'm just saying soda from now
on.
Well,
now you're one of the cool kids.
I'm one of the cool kids?
Yeah.
I made the club.
Yeah,
how about
you're
that?
In. You're in.
They got a long ways to go still. Yeah, I had a blast. Thanks for joining us. That's what the hell just happened.